We are Science Fiction Remnant, a podcast for sci-fi lovers spanning across books, movies, TV shows, and games.
This is Season 1, Episode 43, TV show Farscape, Season 1, Episode 1, premiere for April 10, 2021.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. Thank you so much for coming back.
This means a lot to us. We hope that you find this episode as exciting to listen to as it was for us to create for you.
If you like this show and know someone who might like this podcast, please share it. It would help us greatly in growing this channel.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant and share any comments you have about this podcast with your friends and family.
And before we continue with the show, here are our sponsors and collaborators.
This podcast is a proud member of the Let's Chat Club. Find out how you can become a member by going to the website letschatpodcast.net.
Okay, so this episode for this week was recommended by Kira. It's actually Farscape, the TV show. We're going to talk about season one, episode one. It was recommended to me because, I mean, I've seen the show, but we find out that Giancarlo have not watched the show before.
I did not know about it.
So this episode is called Premiere. It was released.
And guess what? Do you know why it's called Premiere? Because it's the premiere of the show.
It was released in March 1999. And it's, you know, I also found out that you did not know this, was produced by Gene Henson.
Yep. And I mean, I know his work, but I know that you are actually a big fan of his work. Like, yeah. I didn't know about Librarian or Dark Crystal until you mentioned those movies.
Yeah, most people, when you think about him, you think about his puppets. But, you know, it's a lot more.
I think that's a funny thing between the dynamic between you and me, is the timelines. Mm-hmm. Because there are things that I am completely clueless about because they were outside of my time zone.
Exactly.
And on top of that, because I think the way that media behaves in other countries, it's completely different. So like,
definitely,
a kid from the 90s doesn't listen to all the stuff I listen on MTV probably. They listen to other stuff that they watch on MTV in UK. Yeah. If they're from the UK or in China or in Africa, it doesn't matter, you know? So it's kind of funny. It's like our cultural links tie us up to where we are from. And then we get to readapt ourselves wherever we move to another place or we get together with other people that are from other roots.
Perfect example is like Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I never knew that, you know, well, I know now, but like 1963.
No, I had no idea about the show, Doctor Who.
Yeah. And I mean,
before I saw that show, Doctor Who, you will say Doctor Who. And the first thing that comes to mind is Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange, which is something completely different.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's kind of funny because, you know, after that show got released and people finished it, you know, and I think they're going to be another season coming in soon. But then people had hunger of that and they kind of went back and started watching, you know, the old, you know, 1963, 1970, 1980 mm-hmm. Doctor Who's. But yes, is going back to what you were saying, you know, it's a culture thing. Depending on what geographical area you're in, you might know some of the very famous shows, but there's going to be some things that either you're early, late, or never in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of those things. The Farscape TV show, and it has a cult following. It has
I believe you, and I mean, the thing that this is how I see it. You can even see cultures in TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even see that projected, because I mean, and I'm telling you that because like when I watch a TV series from Spain, mm-hmm. you can see their culture completely on it. It's not global. I used to watch a lot of soap operas for teenagers when I was 12 or 13 from Argentina, for example. Mm-hmm. Completely different culture in their behavior. Mm-hmm. Same thing with American TV shows. Like when I was watching the first episode of Farscape, even though it's completely different than anything else, I can see on the acting and like on the talking and on the social behavior between each other, I can see the American signature, like for TV shows that I've seen many times, just cross on TV and Sci-Fi Channel and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know if you know that, but this show was voted one of the greatest cult shows ever.
Oh. Wow.
And in my opinion, I mean, I might be completely off base when I say this, but for me, this marks the very first time to me that Gene Henson does sci-fi. Yeah. And I like what I see. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, when we look at, for example, you know, what is it? Dark Crystal.
And Labyrinth.
Yeah, you see...
But that's not sci-fi, that's fantasy.
Exactly, you see fantasy, but you see how easy it could be to be far apart from reality and his design and his work.
I think that the problem is, and I mean, that's not everybody, but like there's a big confusion outside when it comes to sci-fi and fantasy, because they are both fiction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and the funny thing is that to me they are very, very different still. And I mean, you and I have spoken. I mean, we go through this conversation every time we want to do a movie.
Yeah.
We want to make sure it's good for the show and it's sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know.
So yeah, and I understand why this show has a cult following, because it's actually very unique
and good.
Yeah,
and good.
So I'm really glad that you like this show. This is by far one of my best shows, one of the best shows that I ever seen when it comes to sci-fi.
Okay,
and it this show only had, I believe, 4 seasons. And
a lot of episodes in between seasons.
Well, you get engulfed into the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me confirm here. There are a total of 4, but is your average, season? You know, we're mm-hmm. talking about, what is it, 15 maybe?
15, yeah, that's, well, depending, like, we watch Expanse, for example, it's just 10 episodes per season.
Yeah, and that's actually, it's that seems to be sign of times, because and I think, in my opinion, Disney started out with The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So, and I guess I understand in a way, because if you have less seasons, you have a lot more money to make it more like a cinematic experience.
Yeah.
And that's why traditionally, when you go and see a movie at the theaters, the production value is so high in comparison to a TV show. It's easier to produce 10 shows at quality of, you know, theater, you know, quality of the theater than 25, 30 episodes.
Yeah.
It kind of doubles the value. So I don't know if that's even right. It just kind of makes sense in my head.
It does. It definitely do.
So this show, actually, when it ended, I was really sad, because I really got engulfed into the story. And I believe this is one of the few success stories. The fans got together and they kind of finished the story. I think it's called The Peacemaker.
Is it like a fan-made film, or like a fan fiction writing?
No, this is actually, I believe it was a series or a movie that came out right after.
Oh.
And it was actually in reaction to the fans and how they got together and signed a petition, which is something I wish happens for Firefly. You know? Firefly is another cult following show. But, and I don't know if you noticed, And granted, you only seen one episode, so it's kind of like slightly unfair mm-hmm. to ask this of you, but this show was influenced a lot by Guardians of the Galaxy. Can you see that?
You're saying that this show was influenced by Guardians of the Galaxy?
It had a big influence on
Guardians. Yeah. That's what I was. And I was like, okay, because this is older than Guardians of the Galaxy.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at the crew, it makes total sense. You have an interplanetary crew of pirates, you will call it, because even though that this ship looked like some like a big Enterprise, they are all escapees. They were on jail.
They were all who were they all in all Guardians criminals. Of the Galaxy? They were all criminals. They were all in jail.
Yeah,
in Farscape, where they were
in jail. In jail.
So the only person that wasn't in jail in Farscape was Crichton. Mm-hmm. He kind of got, and he was gonna end up in jail anyways, or worse. Mm-hmm. You know. So, you know, you could see, it's kind of like one of those things that cannot be unseen.
Yeah.
Once you said, it's like, okay, now I wonder. I mean, every time you look at Guardians of the Galaxy now, you're like, okay. So, that being said, you know the influence this show had.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it wasn't, you know, it was a big influence on Guardians of the Galaxy for a reason. And maybe, I don't know, I mean, maybe the director, maybe the writer, maybe someone there found this show to be an amazing show, mm-hmm. like I do. I mean, you only watch one episode right now.
Yeah.
But maybe they got, because of that experience they had, something bleed over into this new production. But mm-hmm. you know, I might be wrong in saying this, but it was a big influence for a reason.
I bet. And I mean, I can see a lot of influence of other things that were made before the time of the movie. Mm-hmm. You said it was 1999.
Right?
Yeah, I can see a lot of things that, like, I mean, he makes funs in a scene. And basically, just to retrace back, what we have here in the story is we have this guy that he has a project and he's going to test out with a little shuttle. It looks like
the idea is Crichton, he's a scientist, and so he has an idea. The space agency, which mm-hmm. by the way, that's another thing I'm going to tell you that I found out. The space agency has paid
LASA,
him,
right?
Which stands
for lasagna.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I had it wrong. It's IASA. It's
IASA.
IASA.
Okay.
But here's the funny thing. Me and Giancarlo were watching this, and we noticed that the Crichton's spacesuit or jumper had the insignia that resembles a NASA insignia. To the T, except that the first N is replaced with an I. And this is the thing that I found out that you did not know. They actually approached NASA so they can use, you know, the
designing,
the logo,
imaging, everything.
I mean, and just mind this. This is only for this episode. This uh-huh. is the only time, right? So they approached NASA. NASA insisted they needed to, you know, approve or review the entire script for the episode, right? There's only one episode. Mm-hmm. And they made it clear it was going to be used only for that one episode. As you could see, once you start watching the show.
There's an introduction
exactly.
for the story, but it's not really part of the whole thing.
They declined.
Mm.
I had no idea why.
So they didn't want their name to be used for the
After
movie.
After they read the script and whatever, they for some reason they decided no.
Was this movie Hollywood?
No, it's you know, the TV show, but that's why the reason why they replaced the N with an I.
Oh my God.
I'm assuming it could be something like International Association Space Agency or something like that, you know?
It could be, or it could be just a silly joke to tell NASA, haha, I laugh at you. I just changed a letter and I still did it.
So, you know, going back to what I was saying, they're trying to, they need, they have this project called Farscape. And as the name implies, they need to figure out a way that they can travel interplanetarily.
But not depending completely on fuel.
Exactly. They want to figure out a way that they can travel fast enough so they can, because, you know, space is huge and, you know. So Crichton is a scientist. They had an experiment and he figured out that he can use the Earth's atmosphere to slingshot in a very specific way. I mean, he has a way that, you know, I mean, it's very familiar when I say it, and you've seen it in many movies. But the way that he has done it, apparently he figured out a way that you can travel interplanetarily by doing his formula. So the whole thing, the whole Farscape project, they designed this, it looks like a shuttle. You know, it's basically an airplane.
It looks like a miniature version of a shuttle with more flexible wings.
Exactly. So the whole idea is they're going to test if this works. He's going to slingshot. Mm-hmm. He's going to go back to Earth and land. So, you know, very fast. And if the idea works, they're going to grab the concept and they're going to build on it.
Yeah.
But the whole idea, just like any scientific experiment, is you want to, you know, after you have your theory, you do the experiments. And this is one of the experiments.
Field test. So, although there's no fuel.
Exactly. So, you know, that brings up that first question that we had in Crichton's helmet. So, I mean, I understand this is a field test. He's a test pilot. He has what most test pilots have on, you know, that type of helmet. Obviously, this one, you know, says NASA and all this stuff. So, I understand.
You and I know that's the exact same design of the Rebel helmet on Star Wars, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
just change the goggles to like a yellowish, and then just put all the
stickers. There's no goggle. It's just that the shield is shaped in like
the gaggle way, right?
Yeah,
because the whole face is uncovered.
Exactly. So he has it up. It looks like he can bring it down, because if you look at the side, there's a mechanism for the glass to come down.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seal you. And he has those goggle things. They look like it go like on top of your like when you bring it down, it looks like it goes on top of your nose and below your eyes. Oh, so it doesn't seal you completely.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. I thought it was just like the helmets on the motorcycles, but it doesn't cover your face completely.
No, it just your eyes. You can bring it down and bring it, but it's completely clear, right? So okay, I give it the benefit of the doubt. You know, as a test pilot, he's not supposed to be in space for a long time. This is going to be a trial. He's going to land, and he needs a way to protect from a shock in case something goes wrong on landing, just like any other test pilot. But the question that I have is, you know, things go wrong. What if as little time as he's supposed to spend in space, what if something happens and he is in space?
You and I know what happens. He's gone.
So it makes you wonder, you know, and I guess, you know, I kind of guess I understand it in a way that whenever we have something to prove, we're willing to give our life for whatever the concept we have to prove that we are right.
Yeah.
But it makes you wonder, like, you know, there are certain things you do, even if nothing happens, but just for safety, you know, just to make sure in case that does happen, you're safe. So I always wonder about that, the helmet design, which makes a lot of sense for whatever he's doing, but it doesn't cover that one thing that could have happened, which in turn, apparently Crichton was right, because that did not happen. Something completely different happened.
Yeah.
And that's the start of the show.
And I mean, I think that at the end of the what happens? I mean, once he gets thrown in and he just disappears.
Oh, but basically, what happened was in the middle of his
experiment.
In the middle of his experiment, right? His module got propelled at high speeds, like he expected it.
I mean,
right?
Think about it. He's floating in parentheses on a shuttle.
Yeah.
That is going 5,000-6,000 miles per hour ahead of us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no launch. It's just that you let it go and that shit is going so fast that you're going to go.
And it's actually skipping through the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But what went wrong was it was hit by a radiation wave.
A radiation wave.
And that's what created a wormhole. They sucked it in.
But you and I had doubts on that. We don't know if it was precisely a wormhole.
Well, I think it was a wormhole.
Because does a wormhole open and close right away, like a split second, and poof, it's gone?
It had, again, we don't know because we haven't seen one, so everything is in theory. Mm-hmm. But it could happen. It could open and close. The only thing that cannot close is many people confuse a wormhole with a black hole.
There's something else that I didn't mention earlier that I think it might be, mm-hmm. but I mean, this is technology that it's just pure science fiction right now, you know? Mm-hmm. A warp field. Yeah. Maybe with the radiation wave and whatever was happening in that point in time in the space, in our orbit, it might have created a warp. And I mean, it's not controlled. So because it's just a reflection or a reaction of that radiation that is coming through, it's just like a door that opens, sucks you in, and closes right away.
Well, in essence, you're right. Because if you think about it, a wormhole...
It's what I'm thinking.
It's actually warping space.
I don't think that the Earth would have been there 2 seconds after if a wormhole, it's open right in our orbit.
Yeah, it would. The problem would be a black hole. That would be the problem.
So you're saying that if we have a wormhole in our orbit, not in the moon, mm-hmm. in our orbit, it's not going to start sucking in and breaking down?
Here's my theory.
Everything nearby?
Here's my theory. How open did that wormhole stay open? How long did it stay open? Well, it was a fraction of a second.
But that's the thing. I never heard of wormholes that open for seconds.
Even
a supernova doesn't last seconds, and that's a very high explosion.
But wormhole has a possibility in theory. Again, we're talking about a lot of theories here. It has a possibility of opening and closing because it's a warping in space.
We're going to need to have Neil deGrasse here.
It's like you're warping. Yeah, we need to have Neil. Neil, please. You know, you're warping space.
Uh-huh.
You're not damaging space. If you damage space, it stayed warp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why, you know, you're right when you say warp field.
Mm-hmm.
Wormhole, in essence, is a warp field. So it's warping space, but its space needs to flip back.
Bend. Yeah.
So in theory, and the reason why I say in theory is because space and time is the same thing. So you can have a flip that takes 5 years, or you can have a flip that takes 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So in 2 seconds, a wormhole in the atmosphere... How much damage can it cause on the Earth if it's just a few seconds?
I don't know. I mean, I am very curious about black holes. And I mean, although one is more potent than the other, they have the same nature. They suck everything in. Right or wrong?
Technically, their wormholes don't suck in.
So you're telling me that if I sit down...
The wormhole is a gate.
It's a gate, but still a hollow that it's transporting somewhere. Now, there's some kind of energy and force within it, isn't it?
A wormhole transports you if you walk inside.
They even say that exactly. But like, so you're telling me that I can literally just put a chair and sit down 30 meters at the mouth of a wormhole and I won't be sucked in?
In my thoughts, in what I have read... You could actually stand at the gate. You imagine a wormhole being as a door.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look inside and you can see the other side of the galaxy.
And it won't suck you in. Right? There's no force coming in or out.
And this is what I'm saying. Most people confuse it with a black hole. Black hole sucks everything in. So when you look at a black hole and you look at a wormhole, many people think is what you're saying right now is what I get the most times.
So how is it possible that you can have a wormhole inside of a black hole?
It's possible. But that's what you're describing, because that would suck you in.
Okay.
But the problem is, you'll never know if it's a wormhole or not. Because you can never come back from a black hole.
I'm certain that it's not a black hole, because like I even done research. They said that a black hole the size of a penny will rip the Earth apart in a matter of 20 minutes.
Oh, yes. And that's why many people are afraid of the Hadron Collider.
Yeah.
Because they feel that if they ever made...
They could destroy everything.
As small as it is.
Even the solar system could be gone.
Exactly. So, yeah, I understand where you're coming from because most people that I talk, they tell, and I could be completely wrong, but mm-hmm. That's the distinction. They can't really make a distinction. And it's because you could, in theory, have a wormhole inside a black hole.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, in my thought, I'm not a scientist. That's why we need Neil.
None of us.
Come on, Neil. We want to have you in the show. So going back to the show, from NASA, I'm going to call it out, NASA Control Center, IASA, even though they declined.
NASA.
Yes. From their perspective, the experiment was a failure. Mm-hmm. All they saw was an explosion, but actually an implosion.
Mm-hmm.
So everything got sucked in into itself. And that's pretty much what you would see.
Mm-hmm. And then the following next, what we see is the experience that Johnny is having.
Yeah.
Which is, they just replay the scene of A Space Odyssey when the guy is going into the dimensions.
Minus Hal.
Yeah. But I mean, it was very similar. But again, and I think that that's a giveaway that it might be a wormhole. You're right.
So,
because I mean, it looks almost the same, you know. Yeah. He's going through a tube. You don't see that if you're in a black hole. No, that's for sure.
You don't see nothing.
So we are positive. It's not a black hole.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what kind of other body or entity or energy out there. I mean, we don't even know what dark matter is made of. You know.
We haven't even seen it.
No, so. We haven't seen it. You know. And they say that what 90% of universe is composed of it.
Is it the black matter, dark matter. Antimatter?
Exactly. Like, we're talking about something that we don't even know how to measure, or like, it's non-tangible right now.
And that's why they have the Hadron Collider, so they can experiment with it and become something tangible, become something they know mm-hmm. about. Because the more we know about that stuff, which is 90% of the space, the more we know about our universe.
Yep.
So... later we know, when we see Crichton goes through the wormhole, we know that he was actually successful.
Mm-hmm.
He was really successful because he got propelled to the other side of the galaxy in a small, tiny airplane. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call it airplane because that's what it is.
That's what it is.
It's shaped like a space shuttle. It might have, you know, it has to have oxygen. I'm assuming it's not going to have a lot of oxygen.
But you cannot see two people on it.
You cannot see two people. And if you look at it, you can see that there's no space for fuel. There's no space for a lot of oxygen. So it wasn't meant to be in space for mm-hmm. long periods of time. It's basically obvious when you look at it. So he was very successful. He propelled from Earth all the way to the other side of the galaxy without any propellant.
Mm-hmm.
But no one on Earth will ever know about it. So for it might as well he gone through a black hole.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he cannot even come back.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for all I know, everybody on Earth thinks that Johnny's dead.
Exactly. So from this point on, we see how he arrives at this place. You can tell that he's shocked because, you know, one moment you see Earth, the next moment all you see is asteroids around you. No Earth around. I don't know if there was ever, was that ever, I don't think there was even a sun.
No. There was a sun.
There was, okay.
But, I mean, he sees asteroids, and to be honest with you, it was a matter of 2 seconds, and then there were a platoon of 3 fighter jets of some kind of weird shapes
mm-hmm.
just flying by him. And then the ships just start coming around that asteroid every couple of seconds.
It wasn't very apparent when you saw it for the first time.
He was adrift.
He was adrift, obviously, because, you know, that ship was just meant to go back down on Earth.
I mean, he's using the oxygen to kind of like position the ship so he can kind of navigate it. So, you know, he's dead on air.
He was basically, he had a very expensive EVA suit.
Yeah.
Because then you had puff of air, you know, so he can go, you know.
You can call it that because inside he has nothing that resembles a space suit.
Exactly.
Like, if you just crack a little bit of window on that shuttle, he's gone.
He's gone.
There's no safety. I mean, it's just what you say. It's an airplane. Mm-hmm. Just like the ejection system. I mean, like, if we continue where we were, like, he's behind that asteroid, like, 4 fighter jets that looks completely different to our fighting ships.
So there's fighting ships, mm-hmm. Fighting spaceships.
So I mean, I think it was a 4th that, I mean, because they were coming around the asteroid and he was adrift, the guy didn't see him. So by the time that he see him, he tries to maneuver, but hits him, lose control, and get plastered on this asteroid.
Yeah, he gets blasted. The ship they crash against him. It appears that he hit a major point on the ship,
mm-hmm.
that made you obvious. He lost control because he's just going. It's just circling until he actually hit an asteroid and exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him being pulled into this huge, massive ship. And this is when we discover, wait a second, there's a battle going around. Because mm-hmm. those ships that went around him, and my thought was, they didn't have time to notice him. Mm-hmm. I guess they probably scanned them, but the technology was so far ahead that it wasn't considered a threat at the moment. Because they have more pressing matters. There was a battle going on,
yeah,
and they needed to bring that ship down. So that's, I believe, why they went around so fast and not even noticing him.
They might have been, yeah, absolutely.
So he got pulled into this huge, huge ship. And
think about, like, to me, do you know what that ship resembled me to?
Mm.
And it might have been copied from this movie, from the show too.
Mm.
In the Orville,
the
ship that they have looks very much like the ship they have. It's just the color that changes.
Well, it's more, the one in the Orville is, in my opinion, is more clinical.
That's what I'm changing clean. The color and everything inside. I'm talking about the shape of the ship. It's like an oval, kind mm-hmm. of flat looking,
mm-hmm.
with like two legs coming on the back. And it has a turbine and the junction in between the two legs.
Three.
Well, three legs. Yeah. This one has three. The yeah. Orbital has two only, right?
The Orbital has three.
Okay. And this one too, actually, because it has yeah. two through the sides and one through the bottom. Well, my point is, like, it looked familiar to, like, when I look at the ship, and then you just follow me later, like, oh, it looks like the ship, the Enterprise ship from the Orville.
This one, does. This one, I wouldn't put him past me, because this is a very cult, cult style mm-hmm. Sci-fi show, and it has influence a yeah. lot of things after it, and it's really interesting, because when you look at the ship, at least to me, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jim Henson's work, but when I see the ship, I see Jim Henson's work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your typical spaceship. It looks very organic. Not what's the word? Very biologically organic.
What you're saying, I know what you're saying, because since I enjoy art in many different ways, I've seen it, and it's basically, you can see on artists of any degree, any job, you can see their signature in their work.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a painting on me, or you see a painting on the or anywhere in the house, you're going to be able to say, oh, that's Giancarlo painting, even if you don't see the signature. If you see a Dalí painting with those elephants with mm-hmm. 50 long legs,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that nobody has to tell you what it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's Dalí. Just something, melted clocks, people that look like they've been on mushrooms, or they are defigured with the nose in the belly button and shit like that. Oh, Dalí. Or you see somebody plastered in like weird shape. Oh, Picasso. You
exactly. know?
So mm-hmm. just the same way, he is able to create a signature throughout his work. So you can see it's him when you see his work right away.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you see it in the doors, the mm-hmm. hallways, the characters being, marionettes or not.
Mm-hmm. And that's a funny thing. You keep on calling it marionettes. It looks more to me like CGI makeup robots and stuff like that. It looks very good. It doesn't look funny looking like the Muppets, because the Muppets, even though it's the same technique and how they use it,
mm-hmm.
the look that the aliens have here is striving to look realistic, not yeah. like a puppet.
And that's a cool thing. I think that's one of the really cool things about this show
mm-hmm.
is because all these aliens that you see, it's not CGI.
No, it's not.
And it's really cool how he can make it happen without CGI. Well, I'm sure the show would have CGI, obviously.
But, of course.
But like in the characters.
Any space scene that we're watching is CGI.
Look at Diago. Look at Zan. You know, Iago's design on his makeup, Zan's painting, because basically it's all she's painted on, and that design makes it look realistic.
Yep.
And you can see his work in it, which is amazing. So I don't think that, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of, you know, a couple of CGIs, but you don't see that. I want to say maybe about 80% of the characters on the show will be completely, you know,
That I noticed. I mean, so far from the characters that we see on the episode one, and I mean, I wouldn't call that CGI. It's just the hologram of the pilot.
Exactly.
For the big ship. I'm not retaining the name. What was the name of the big ship?
Moya.
The Moya. The pilot of the Moya, that they're showing on a hologram. And later on, they show into you anyways on the piloting bridge. So, I mean, but besides that, there's... I haven't seen really to tell you like an alien race that they're using CGI on. They're using real actual makeup. So when they're filming it, they don't look unreal.
Look at Rigel.
Yeah.
Rigel. What does Rigel looks like? I mean,
I just... you want me to tell you? He looks like a sea cucumber.
Sea cucumber.
with mustache.
Oh my God.
And eyes.
He's hilarious, you know. So basically what's going on is Moya is being attacked by
the peacemakers.
What we later know as to be the peacemakers.
Hence, they don't make peace.
Well, we were talking about this, and I believe that for them and their society, they feel that they're bringing peace to the galaxy because they're conquering everybody. So they don't, once they're conquered, you don't have those typical fights among each other and the wars among other, you know, between planets. Oh,
of course not, because now you're being subjugated by one single force.
Exactly. So there are the villains, but they don't see themselves as villains. They see themselves as bringing the peace.
I'm sure that Hitler thought he was a freaking hero, man. You know?
Yeah.
So I read something somewhere that says like, a man can destroy entire cities and think that he's doing the right thing on his mind, and nobody will be able to change it.
Exactly.
So that's the messed up part, is that these people think that it's just, it's what you mentioned. And again, I find it funny that when he gets locked up, he says Steven Spielberg didn't get it that wrong. got it wrong, he said.
And you know, that's one of the funny things. If you watch this show, this is one of those few shows where other sci-fi, you know, TV or movies, and show. They make, there's tons and tons of references. And you know, I don't know if you know this, but Crichton, the actual actor, Ben Balder, he's a huge sci-fi fan.
Oh.
He's very big into sci-fi. So in this show, I mean, once you start watching the show, you realize this, but he makes references to, like, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Star Trek, Doctor Strangelove.
Nice.
It comes out of the blue.
Okay.
You know, like, I bet you didn't expect him to mention Spielberg.
No.
It just came out of the blue.
When I saw him doing that, and I mean, think about it. It's funny because, I mean, even though they're portraying our actual reality back in that time, usually when you watch a movie, you're not expecting to see the everyday things mentioned.
Especially in a sci-fi world.
Exactly. And then you're seeing all the NASA and all the thing, but you're like, okay, we're going to space. But then you get the references and the jokes. You're like, oh, all right. I think on a way that's smart for a movie, doesn't matter what you're watching, the reason why is like it kind of makes you feel some kind of common ground with the character on the movie. So it gets you more into the story at the same time subconsciously. Because when he says Steven Spielberg, or when he mentions something about groceries or a brand of something that you and I know or like, you're like, oh,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like that meme from Leonardo DiCaprio, like he's holding a cup and he's just like pointing at the TV like, I know that.
So, yeah. So he goes into Moya Now, actually, he got pulled into Moya because he's actually calling control or for help, assistance. My engines don't work. You know, I'm being pulled into this thing. And he got into this ship. And that's when we meet for the first time, or when he meets for the first time, Iago and Zan, where they were very busy on the battle.
Should we change their names? We can call it Grumpy and Horny.
They're very two opposite sides of the spectrum. Oh my God.
They are such a pair.
So just paint this picture for a minute. They're trying to escape the peacekeepers. They are fighting with these peacekeepers at that specific moment, and they turn around and they look someone that looks like a peacekeeper.
Mm-hmm. Because that's the other thing, peacekeepers are the only ones that look like humans in this side of the galaxy.
Exactly. I mean, granted, inside they're different. They're biological differences,
but they look on the outside the same.
Exactly.
But you know what's the message then? Don't trust humans. They're all assholes. They'll fuck it up wherever they go. Doesn't matter the galaxy, the time or place.
We are the virus of planet Earth.
Yep.
So, you know, this is when he gets injected, this nano.
And shit, injected through a boot. In the foot.
Yes.
I cannot imagine the pain. That I don't know how he was walking normally. I'd be limping for hours.
Ouch, ouch, ouch.
Yeah, man. It was like on the side of the foot, on the front part.
Through a boot.
Through a boot. A military boot, like a heavy-duty boot. I'm like,
you know the force that you have to go through?
I don't even know if, like, you know that needles have, like, a hollow inside. Uh-huh. So you imagine if you just, like, chop a teeny tiny bit of that leather or whatever the rubber is and just shove it inside of it, too. So now he has a pebble under his foot. It's painful, man.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. When I saw that part over there, I was like,
But that was something hilarious, too, that I really like about, I mean, the creativity in which everything is explained so far has me captivated, because you have like that like he gets to the room and he sees Horny and Grumpy and they are just blabbering in some weird language, of course.
Exactly, because they're aliens, yeah.
And he cannot get them, and then Grumpy comes in, of course, and just hang him by the arm.
By the neck,
yeah, and lift him up. And then when he gets injected, he starts trying to start to understand.
And yeah, language becomes clear. And later we know that this is a nanotechnology that he got injected with that goes straight to the brain and helps you translating. So that one is very fascinating, because now that you know this, then the realization comes that they are actually all speaking their native language, but they all understand each other.
But here's the funny thing. Which bring to my mind that's like, these are little things that leave me dazzled. It's like, okay, so everybody speaks everything different, but we get this microbe and we understand each other's. So it leads me to understand that at the end of the day, even though there are so many languages, and like even in reality, think that there are aliens out there and we have no idea how they talk. It kind of translates to tell you that deep inside, linguistics, it's universal.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if not, it shouldn't be possible with no nano nothing. Because the nano thing allows you to understand, but at the same time, it doesn't make you talk it.
Let's think about this for a minute, right? They are all injected with this nanotechnology since birth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that it's not translating board? But transmitting, kind of like Neuralink, for example, but in nano in your brain. Since everybody has this technology on their brain, it is very easily to assume that it's a transmitter, a receiver, where you can actually communicate brain waves. So you're talking, but you're actually just getting the concepts in your brain thanks to the nanotechnology. I always thought about that for some reason.
Yeah. And that's something else. Like, I don't know, like we spoke about this when we're talking about Neuralink. But basically, and here's what I was just saying. It seems that at the end of the day, language has a universal structure regardless of its origin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's like what Elon Musk is saying about Neuralink. Like, once you have that thing over there, then here to 4 years, whatever, you're not going to even need to talk, because really, when you talk, you're actually losing integrity of data that you have in your mind, so I can give you a whole thought and you know what it is already.
Exactly.
So that means that if I can give you a whole thought and you understand it,
mm-hmm.
that means that language is really just a necessity for communication. But at the end of the day, like, I can give you full thoughts and things like that. Maybe that's what's happening. In my head, I don't know really, like, how will that work, like, with this microbe or something?
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, I'm talking in a language, and a nano robot is not going to make me hear something different because it doesn't alter sound waves.
The thing is...
So if I say, Pablito clavó un clavito, and you have a bacteria, it's not going to change the sound of that, so you understand it.
But here's the thing.
You're going to still hear me saying that, even though you understand something else.
Here's the thing. I'm gonna throw you on a loop in there.
Okay.
What are sound waves?
Sound waves?
Yeah.
Vibrations that we send, just like radio waves, just like x-rays. So it's a different type of gamma, a wave on the gamma.
Follow me on what I'm going to say and then tell me what
just
you
like
think.
Light.
Follow me on what I'm going to say and then tell me what you think. Vibrations in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are captive. They're being captured by sensors in your ear. Right. Mm-hmm. And then those are sent to your brain for interpretation. And then your brain could analyze it as sound, interpret the words, and come up with a meaning.
Yeah.
So we're clear there. What if those nanos are doing the same thing, but with transmission from the other nanos in the other head?
I can tell you why I don't think that's possible.
No?
Because you got the nanobots, you're not getting a library with universal language, so it can actually make you understand.
Here's my
thought. So, like, what I'm saying is, like, if you come to talk to me in Klingon, even if you put that thing on me, I don't know anything about Klingon. I don't know what the word sounds like.
Okay.
So you're putting a nano thing. It feels like the nanobacteria. It's a library that I'm putting on your foot so you can understand a language you have no idea of.
Well, here's why I say this. What happens when he told the peacekeeper, that played by Claudia Black, right?
Mm-hmm.
The word compassion, the word paper, what happened?
I mean, to me, it's funny because it's not like she hates the feeling of compassion.
Well, that's the thing. You're skipping. He said,
it's like her reality is completely abstract to what you and I live.
She said, what is compassion?
Mm-hmm.
And then he explained what compassion was, and well, then I hate it. So right?
Exactly, but she was explaining what compassion is. She received the description, but it's not like she knows it. She said, "Then I hate it." You know, it's like she gets the whole thing backwards. I mean, oh, you're a horrible person, and you can see she shows compassion in the show.
Yes.
So she doesn't hate it. She doesn't understand what the word compassion is.
Well, I think he hated it because it goes against what she was brought up to be as a kid. Since a very young age, she was grown up to be a part of the military machine.
I want
to
see Grumpy being compassionate.
So, you know, that's the reason why I say it is because he's in my reality in this show. She is being sent from his nano into her nano, the word compassion along with the meanings. But she's never experienced that before. She had no idea what it is. The same thing when he said paper. He's being sent the word paper together with the meaning of what paper looks like. And she doesn't know what that is.
Exactly. So you see where I'm going? That right there, I think, is a batch in the system of the linguistic with the nano thing. Because the thing is, if this actually makes you understand everything, I shouldn't need to explain you what a word means, because you know what it means the moment that you hear the wave, because it's not related to the sound of the words. So that's what I'm saying. You're getting a nano that does something on your brain. You're not getting a library in your head with those bacteria that would give you the knowledge to understand.
No library, no. It's a translator.
Exactly. It makes sense what I'm saying?
Kind of in parts.
So I'm thinking it's more related like with the Neuralink idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though I'm talking, you're getting my idea directly in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking that you're just hearing me talking, probably.
Which kind of makes sense for someone that has, like, here's the thing. If you have the same or similar upbringing, mm-hmm. right, or similar ethics and stuff like that, it's easier for you to understand a concept when it's yeah. directly streamed into your head mm-hmm. than, say, someone that has a complete different idea, complete different upbringing than you, because now you're going to receive these concepts into your head and you're going to try to analyze mm-hmm. and come up with a solution based on nothing that you have experienced in the past. You have no precedent for it. So now you're probably going to have a lot more questions
yeah.
than answers. So I don't know. I mean, it's one of those topics where we can talk for hours.
Oh yeah. Well, we did the same thing in the arrival too. Yeah. Anything that really involved topic of linguistic with extract, like different races.
Yes.
It yeah. can get very tricky.
And I mean, the arrival was even worse because you're not only talking about a complete different race, but you're talking about a complete different being in a complete different reality
yeah.
in a complete different dimension.
Yep.
So, yeah. So he goes into the ship, right? And now he sees everything. He hears everything. But they are mistrusting him because they're fighting in their minds. They're fighting his race.
Mm-hmm. No. So they are distrustful of him mm-hmm. because of the ship. But actually... And I'm still not catching the names because I just watched the first show. So Horny tells him.
Zan.
Okay. So Zan tells him at some point in the first episode, so like, we knew you were not one of them, but we had to make sure because we had no idea where you are.
Well, she said we knew after they test him.
Oh, okay. I thought he was.
After, because at first they didn't know. I mean, he looks like a peacekeeper, you know?
Because that's why they got him naked. Like, he woke up naked. It was because, I mean, even though they knew, they had to check.
They had to check.
That yep. he was not the same. So, like, they did some kind of biological experiment on him. Like,
they tested him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to know this. After I showed you this show, can you say you like the show and want to see more of it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, do I feel a thank you coming?
Oh, hell yeah. I love the show, man.
Towards Kira?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, Kira. I love this show, man.
I just had to ask because, you know, she actually, well, we were communicating via Twitter. And she okay. was very curious to see what your thoughts were on this show.
I mean, I adore it. I mean, I love how everything is well elaborated so far. You know, even the things that make reference, it just give you like some nostalgia, really.
Yeah. 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 It does. Because it's, I mean, 1999. So the show is dated.
Yeah. No. And I mean, reference that he makes to other movies that came from ideas, that too gives you just more nostalgia still. Yeah. Absolutely.
So going back to, I mean, after he's basically in jail because they still, even though they know, he is not a peacekeeper. They still they're unsure about the ship. They don't know that technology.
And they don't know him.
And yeah, obviously they don't know him. They all escaped from prison
mm-hmm.
together with the ship. Moya, in that battle, we see that the restraints broke. And apparently she has been restrained for most of Moya's life.
And when he says she, he's referring to the ship.
I don't know. For some reason, I always call her a she.
Well, that's the thing. Like, until you explain it to me, I didn't really get it until I saw that scene. I'm like, oh. But, I mean, Moya, the big fleet sheep.
Ship. Yeah,
because she among
us. It's huge.
Like a Enterprise, it's tiny next to it.
Yes.
So, but that thing is alive.
It's a biological
what did she call it? A biomechanism?
Yeah. And I don't know if you noticed, but there's a symbiosis between Moya's race and the pilot's race.
Oh.
Pilots they cannot exist without connecting to Moya's race.
So oh, there's know.
Wherever there's a Moya, there's a pilot.
So what happened to the pilot when he's born? It's born into the ship?
Well,
I didn't go into those details, probably. That's just me being picky.
I'd rather let you, you know. But, you know, I just wanted to know that's the reason why you always see pilot
mm-hmm.
in that room. I mean, you haven't seen it from the first episode, but yeah, I think yeah, I showed show, you a trick.
No, they showed like near the end.
Okay.
There's a
okay.
scene that they show in sitting down, like there's like two bridges going out from where he's sitting.
And it's incredible that that has been controlled by different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically a Muppet.
No, yeah, absolutely that. But you cannot feel it. Like you see the Muppets or like the aliens talking that they are not, they don't have an actor underneath.
Mm-hmm.
They just look as real. They look lively.
And I don't know what it is. I mean, there's something there because you do CGI. You know, CGI has gotten a real good lately, mm-hmm. right? Because they can simulate light. But when you're capturing real light, real reflections,
mm-hmm.
it always going to look real.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, I mean, granted, it doesn't look as good as many CGIs nowadays. But when you look at this, you feel like everything is real because of the camera is capturing light on a scene,
mm-hmm.
And is not. There's no composite onto the scene afterwards. This is for most of the scenes, obviously, because there is CGI here. I'm not saying there's no CGI,
mm-hmm.
but on the parts, like for example, when you look at Rigel, when you look at the pilot, it just feels different than if they were CGI. So if they ever remake this show, I hope they bring Jim Henson's company because I don't think CGI will do it justice.
Yes and no. I mean, with the technology we have today, Robert, you are even able to create a robotic...
Well, animatronics are still not CGI.
No.
And it's still going to be, granted, it might not have that Jim Henson's look, but it's still going to look realistic.
And I mean, we have no idea if, like, I don't know if you noticed, like, the Emperor thing, the thief that farts helium.
Rigel.
Yeah. Like, he's talking to some other ugly-ass monster. Like, this thing looks like a giant cockroach with teeth.
Yes, yes.
And, I mean... That doesn't look like a Muppet. It looks like a CGI, like a mechatronic.
That could have been an animatronic.
Animatronic. Yeah, like a robot with parts that looks like a alien. I think that they did that a lot there, and I would not doubt that they might have done that for the pilot too. Because, I mean, if you think about it, the pilot is a stationary character.
Mm-hmm.
He does not go anywhere. He's always sitting on that base that is like a round desk.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be difficult to make a half-body robot that moves around and like click on the buttons and stuff.
It would definitely be easier for the actors. But if you know Gene Henson, that's just how he works.
Mm-hmm.
Where he control, there's, and I'm assuming for pilot, there would have been a couple people controlling.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have like maybe a little stick where you kind of move the stick up and the arms move up.
Oh, okay.
And then you have someone controlling the mouth with like different things. Like you pull this thing over here. You have to kind of see how they work. But I think that is a very clever, not clever, but it's endearing. To watch a character. And I think that's the reason why Muppets were so big when they were under actually, even now, I think when you have a Muppet movie come out, what about Sesame Street?
Yeah.
The controlling a puppet or a doll
mm-hmm.
to move and act like that was the basis of theater back in the day.
Yeah,
when they have the puppets, and so I think there's a very endearing aspect of watching, a puppet show.
Yeah.
So in theory, if you think about it, put it to the most basic sense, Farscape is a Muppet show.
Starring.
It's a puppet show.
No. Like, so we're watching is like starring Alien Muppets.
So, he's going back to the story. Crichton is in jail because they don't really trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's with Aaron's son, which is an officer it's a peacekeeper officer. And throughout the entire time that they were there, you know, obviously she wants to escape. She wants to get all these people that were criminals in jail, back in jail, and she wants to recover Moya for the peacekeepers. So there was a scene where they, obviously they needed, you know, they needed things for the ship.
Yeah.
You know, it ranges from tools to food to anything. So they came close to this planet where they needed to restock, basically. And this is when Aaron had the idea and told Crichton that, you know, they're going to escape and they're going to call for the peacekeepers to be rescued.
Yep.
And we had this conversation, what I told you, and at the time you probably didn't quite understand it. You kind of got it at the later on. That was not necessarily because we're not going to have Aaron's son on the show, but because Aaron's son in this show is a very crucial character because she is or was a peacekeeper. And because of that, she is the best chance that this group of, you know, people, or, you know, if you want to call
it, will survive against the other ones.
Will survive against the peacemakers is because she was a peacemaker. She knows everything about it.
Yep.
I agree. When I said the best thing that Crichton could have done is go down with Aaron's son.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, when I saw him trying to run away with the girl that gave him the beating of his life as a salute, and then like, she's not being nice to him all around, you know?
At
like,
all.
She's not giving him the vibe, like, you shave with me.
But in her mind, he's a peacekeeper out of uniform, and that's disrespectful. So I believe that's how and why she beat him up to the ground and then got on top and asked, okay, what's your rank? Because the farthest thing from her mind is that this is actually an alien.
Yeah.
And when he said, yeah, I'm a commander, but not that, not from a military, you know, I'm a scientist and I'm come from planet Earth.
Get excited. but the thing is, like, and I mean, when they're escaping, I mean, even he knows that she's not to be trusted because she was going to sabotage and mess him up when they escaped. And he was like, no, 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 these guys are not hurting us. And to be honest with you, I think that the crew by this point have hurt him less than what she hurt him, which is kind of ironic. It's like, they're keeping me captive, but you that were in the same cell with me, you've hurt me more than them.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Why would I trust you?
Yeah, no, I hear you. So, I mean, I think, you know, they go down, right? They call the peacekeepers, Captain Crist, goes down with army, and apparently that ship at the beginning of the episode that got destroyed was his brother, and he's accusing Crichton of killing his brother. And that is something that even from the very first day that I saw it, I mean, it's not a testimony of bad writing by any means. Don't misunderstand. But it shows the character of Captain Crist.
I've seen that poor attitude in people before.
You've seen that kind of people that something goes wrong and they have to find fault in someone else. And it doesn't matter that there's proof in front of their face. They don't care.
They don't care.
This person is guilty and they're going to pay for it.
Yep. It's like, I want your head. I'm going to have it one way or another. You know? Because, I mean, it's evident. Like, they see the take and everything. You can see this shuttle is adrift. And you see the ship of the brother comes around, could not evade, touches, and blows up against the asteroid. And he's saying that he actually charged against his brother. I'm like, what the heck, bro?
With what engines?
He charged how? By just floating around?
No, he charged. Okay, he's going to charge. Listen.
Yep, that's what he was doing. He could not control his own ship. And it's not like he was flying or moving anywhere. Oh, so, man. I mean, for you to be like a commander or something, and you're going to say that somebody charged another ship by that?
I think, oh my God. I think Aaron's son actually realized this. Remember when she started walking?
She did.
The normal thing is to salute your commander, officer.
She told him, like, in her head, she's thinking that they're going to help him.
And you know? When he says, like, okay, you know, you killed my brother, And she's like,
she's clarifying to him.
He's like, Captain, I don't think he's intelligent or smart enough to attack, which makes sense.
No, and goes as far and explain to this moron what he sees. And if you can see, he was hit. I don't think that he did charge at your brother.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it for a minute, you know, you're in this ship. Are you going to attack a fleet? Let's assume you have a fast ship. Let's assume you have all the weapons on that ship. Mm-hmm. That tiny little ship, right? You're going to attack a fleet of ships with one ship.
Smart, right?
So I think she had a point when she said, I don't think this guy is smart or, I forgot the word that she used.
Intelligent.
Intelligent enough.
But then you can see that the commander is just being a little bitch, because right after that, he just kind of puts her on the spot and like, oh, we have these
jurisdictions.
You've been too exposed. You could be also a traitor now. And I'm like, why would you call a traitor somebody that was locked up against their will?
And he's calling you on your bullshit.
Yeah, and he's coming to you with the captive you wanted. So it's like, no, you're just trash, man. Like the dirt under the toes on my foot are better than him.
I think this is a pivotal point. The pivotal point where Aaron's son realized,
Definitely.
This is it. You can't come back. So they escaped. You know, it was Aaron, Diago, mm-hmm. And Crichton. And there was a scene where Crichton actually freed, he had the ability to free because he had the keys.
Yeah, the three of them were cuffed.
Yeah, the three of them were cuffed.
And then they were fighting to see who was the first one that he was going to release, because he could not release himself.
So I think Aaron was counting on the fact that, oh yeah, you know, Crichton is just like me, so he's going to free me first. It's like,
yeah.
I was like, dude, you don't.
No. If he would have done that, I would have disliked the character right away. But it seems that he's not a stupid dumbass, yeah. You know? It's like he has that compass to determine with judgment of character what you do, so he can see who's more trustworthy. And honestly, by that point, Grumpy had behaved more like a trustworthy character than her.
Exactly. So he freed them and they went back to the ship. And this is when I think Aaron kind of realizes she could no longer be a peacekeeper.
I think that she was not accepting it, but I think that it hit her. The moment that she tried to clarify mm-hmm. the accident with the shuttle, the answer that she got, I think that kind of hit her. Like, okay, I'm screwed. I'm going to be turned in and executed probably.
No, if you think about it, it's a little sad, because she was brought up since she was a kid to be a peacekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's forced not to go against what she was brought up to be.
No, now she's not forced. Let's put it more funny and related to life, because this happened to a lot of people that don't care about your problems, but once it happens to them, they care about it. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with her. She was part of a problem. She did not see it until the problem affected her.
Yes.
The problem affected her, because if you're not with me, you're my enemy. And unfortunately, she was not able to be part of them anymore. So she just became the enemy by default.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like at that moment is when the wrongness of what she was doing hit her. And I mean, it's not like she got an enlightenment right there. I'm sure that throughout the whole show, she keeps on realizing more and more in the first couple of episodes that she was with the bad guys.
Yeah. And the thing, it becomes apparent as you watch the show too, that she is trying to cope. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like you have this job all your life and now you're forced to do a different job and you don't know exactly what you're doing.
And you're doing a job with people that you consider in the past criminals, your enemies.
Exactly.
That's the funny thing.
Yeah. Well, for them, these people are beneath what they are. So you would think that in a psychological way, it kind of weighed on her mind as well. Because, you know, she was above them and now she's beneath them,
mm-hmm.
In a sense that they're going to go to jail, but she's going to die.
Yeah.
Because she's already sentenced. So I don't know. At some point, I was thinking maybe at some psychological level, this weighed on her.
I know. That has a name, man.
Oh.
Self-preservation.
Oh, yeah.
It will make you do whatever you need to so you don't die.
Exactly. So, yeah, this is one of my favorite shows, and I just hope, you know, it's too late for me now, because if they haven't done it by now, they're not going to do it, and no one is talking about it. And you know how it is sometimes when you have something that works so well, everybody's afraid of touching it.
Because they don't want to fuck it up.
Like, even the same creators. Look at what we talked about Gattaca. How they mm-hmm. asked the guy to do a part two and he refuses.
Don't go far. I was reading about the sequel for Avatar, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that James Cameron might even want to fire the writer because he didn't follow exactly to the letter everything on the movie. So, and I mean, in a way, I can understand him because, like, okay, I'm not the writer, I'm the director. But what people are going to see is my work. Mm-hmm. Through your writing.
Exactly.
So at the end of the day, even though he doesn't do fully the whole thing, it's like, it's me who they're going to trash.
Yeah. So, yeah, this, I kind of find it hard to believe at this point that anyone have not heard of Farscape, but I was proven wrong when, you know, with you. Mm-hmm. So if you have not watched this show, at least watch the first episode. It's where we watch it. Was it a Hulu or?
I think we're watching Amazon.
Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, just watch the first episode.
Yeah, after the first episode, you're screwed. You're gonna just want to continue and be watch it. It's very good.
So let us know. You know, reach out to us. Discord, Twitter. You know, everything is on the show links. Let us know. Let's have the discussion. Let me know if you guys agree with our thoughts. Have you seen the show when it aired? Let us know if you have not seen it and you saw it and you liked it after you heard our episode.
Do you have any favorite episodes by any chance?
Do you have any favorite characters?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite characters is not shown in the first episode, but I can't wait for you to watch the other ones and then we can discuss it.
Well, I had two favorites so far. I like Grumpy and Horny. For me,
you know, I never thought about it before, but it makes total sense.
Of course, man.
Especially how Zan thanked Crichton.
Oh my god, I was like, what the heck just happened? You had to explain it to me because I just didn't make sense to me.
You know,
like she goes and like hugs him, put her face next to him, and then he just kind of shaking up like he got a little shock, but it was not painful.
If you realize, it's the kind of shake that you have after you have an orgasm.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden he was...
He's like blinking hard and like just like shaking like softly like, ooh, ooh, ooh.
And then he was like, you know, he was like flustered, you could
yes.
see.
Yes, but the best part is that she's moving away from him and she's just smiling with malice like, I know what I did.
So let us know who your favorite character forever episode. Let's discuss this. And again, this is my favorite show, and I actually
all of them are your favorite.
Well, this is one of my favorites, and I thank Kira for recommending this
absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely, thank you, Kira,
for Giancarlo's. It escaped my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I never really thought about it until she brought it up. So, thank you. Well, this is the end of our show for now. Please let us know if you liked this episode.
And let us know if you have any idea about which topics you would like us to discuss in our next episodes.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at SciFiRemnant. And if you like this podcast, share it.
And don't forget to rate us in your favorite podcast platform. This will help us grow. Thank you.
See you next time. This is Science Fiction Remnant, signing off. Next on Science Fiction Remnant.
This is Season 1, Episode 44, Movie 12 Monkeys.
Live underground and they developed time travel. And so basically, the scientists know that Cole's a good researcher. He gets information and he gets hired to. Well, actually, no, he doesn't get hired.
That was interesting. Him, it's like, volunteer, come forward. It's like, I did not volunteer.
Yeah.